This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of Monday, March 29th, 2021. I'm Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. You know, we've talked a lot in the last year about how the pandemic has hurt bars and restaurants. But of course, there's a whole ecosystem of vendors and suppliers for these eateries and watering holes that took the same punch. IBJ's Susan Orr has a fascinating story in the latest issue of IBJ about Indiana breweries whose sales of beer in kegs went flat in 2020 when some bars and restaurants closed, and some of those that persevered had limited seating and restricted hours of operation. The pivot for this problem meant focusing on cans. Consumers still wanted to drink beer, and many brewers focused on kicking their canning lines into overdrive and sending more suds to supermarkets and liquor stores. This week's podcast focuses on one in particular, Indianapolis-based Sun King Brewing Company, which launched in 2009 and grew like someone had taken a 16-ounce bottle and shaken it for 20 minutes. Co-founded and still led today by Clay Robinson and Dave Colt, Sun King is now the largest brewery in Indianapolis and the second largest in the state. Now, Sun King typically cans about 60% of its beer for sale at retail stores. The other 40% is sold in kegs to bars and restaurants. After the pandemic hit last year, Sun King saw demand for kegs dwindle and consumer demand from supermarkets and liquor stores spike. In the final toll for 2020, Sun King made about the same amount of beer, but 95% of it was canned. We should point out that canned beer has a greater cost to the company in terms of labor and materials. Sun King needed to slash some expenses in order to stay afloat. It also took advantage of a $900,000 federal payroll protection program loan. All in all, it ended 2020 with a slight profit. Of course, Sun King isn't just a brewery. In recent years, it has opened 6 tap rooms in central Indiana with locations downtown and in Fishers, Carmel, Broad Ripple, Kokomo, and the Indianapolis International Airport. To get a fuller sense of how Sun King's business changed during the pandemic and the ways that it took evasive action, I asked Clay Robinson to join me as the guest for this week's edition of the podcast. Here's our conversation. I'm pleased to welcome to the podcast Clay Robinson. He's co-founder, co-owner, and co-CEO of Sun King Brewing Company. Thanks so much for making time today.
I'm happy to be here.
We are at a really interesting point right now in the pandemic. We're at a point where I can actually afford to call it interesting instead of traumatic, because the mood is so hopeful. It's as hopeful now, I think, as it has been in the last year. Usually with these conversations, we start with, you know, tell me about March 2020. But I'm really curious right now just to take your temperature on the last month. Yeah, I'm assuming that, like, due to the easing of the restrictions in restaurants and bars, the improving weather, the anticipation of March Madness, and now just this last weekend, the opening rounds, Sun King is in a significantly different place than it was, let's say, in January.
Certainly. But
in general, I mean, what is the most different?
Between the weather and the basketball, and with all of that has caused a number of bars and restaurants to reopen. So when the pandemic hit a year ago, pretty much overnight, we lost half of our business, and about half of our revenue, and about 40% of our beer went out to the door to bars and restaurants. So with those closed and all of our tap rooms to go only, it was a pretty huge impact. So it really does feel like we're kind of easing out of this and that we're moving in the right direction, and people feel a little bit more comfortable, and they're also excited to have some things to do, and there's people coming to Indianapolis, and there was an excitement in the city the last weekend or a week or so that I haven't seen in so long. It feels like years now.
When you get the numbers, when you get mm-hmm. you know, the reports, maybe just the last month, what indications do you have that things are turning around? Where do you see that?
You know, for us, again, the return to business on the draft beer side is a big indicator for us. It's definitely been hard to really track and determine. It all has kind of happened rather fast. And, you know, in working with our distributor who delivers all our beers to bars and restaurants, we kind of went from pretty steadily small amounts of draft beer trickling out to, in the last month, things really kicking up to the point where, planning sense, we actually had to take our brewing schedule and go from what was a pretty comfortable rate to we're absolutely maxed out for the next month on our brewing schedule, because it takes each brewing cycle is 3 weeks to 4 weeks. So all of a sudden, as it's kind of ticked up, it was almost like, whoa, this is happening and it's real. And like, we added 300 barrels to our production schedule just last week. So,
wow.
Yeah. So those kind of things make you realize that something's happening.
When I think about Sun King now, I really do think about two different kinds of businesses. Like the last time we spoke, Sun King was still essentially a beer brewing operation. When you brewed beer, you put it in cans or you put it in kegs, and then you sold it. Over the last several years, you have added a whole new sort of consumer-facing component. You have tasting rooms, you have restaurants. So we'll get to those in a second. Let me first ask you just about the beer brewing side. You said something really interesting, that 40% of your revenue was going to bars and restaurants, or coming from, excuse me, bars and restaurants from the draft side. And then overnight, that just disappeared.
Yeah, it certainly did. It was a very scary moment in time. You know, my partner Dave and I, we are co-CEOs. We run the business in tandem. And pretty much from the moment that this all hit, we spent most of our waking hours at our business, discussing our business, dealing with changes and transitions. And we were very quick to react at that point in time. So one of the things, starting in late 2018 and all of 2019, we took an open book management approach to our business and started teaching financial literacy to all of our team members, staff members, so that they understood what money coming in, where it goes out, and how Sun King or any business makes a profit and why profit is important, and then start to look at where we can make improvements. And so when this all hit, again, we lost 50% of our revenue overnight. So we had an immediate all staff meeting and said, hey, we don't know what is happening, but we are no longer kegging beer because bars and restaurants aren't open. Everything is going into cans that we have in production. We're slowing down production because we don't know what's going to happen, and we don't know what's going to happen. You know, people are talking about maybe we're going to stay home for 2 or 3 weeks, get ahead of this thing, and then come right back out of it. We don't know if that's the case. And a lot of our people are like, well, can't we just wait and see? And we're like, we can't wait and see. Like, we have to make dramatic decisions right now. And everything is on the table, from everyone here, including us, everyone taking pay cuts, to the potential for furloughs, to layoffs. Like, the biggest decisions that we have to make are, how do we ensure that a year from now there is a Sun King, so that the 60 of us who work here today still have jobs, and we can't be slow to react on that front. And I'm really grateful that our staff understood, and that we're able to be so upfront and honest with them, and that we were able to discuss all of these decisions and kind of get ahead of this.
And then something really interesting happens, the way I understand it, is that your retail sales surge to the point where it makes up for the lack in the restaurant and bar sales.
Yeah, it's a super weird element of things. I mean, March, we went to go only in our tap rooms, which we basically had enough business to cover the labor for our salaried management team, so we could keep those folks employed. And bars and restaurants were gone. And as that all happened, the shifting consumer behaviors last year was really insane. You know, April, can sales started ticking back up, and then May, they were up. And then by the time we hit June, and we were 3 months or so into this, we had reached a point where our can sales had doubled, to the point where we were actually selling as much beer as we typically would have. We were just selling it in a completely different manner, because people switched from buying six packs to buying 12 packs. And you're only going to the store maybe once a week, so you're buying a case of beer instead of a six pack of beer. And people were stocked up and staying home, and it really changed everything for us.
That is really fascinating. Now, inside the building, how does that change things when you are going from, you know, the draft operation to the can operation?
We have a kegging line, and that team wasn't running that machine as much. Without bars and restaurants, our sales team was not going to visit those places or working. So actually, because the canning line now is running essentially twice as much as it was ever planned or staffed for, it was an all hands on deck situation. And every single week, our HR director would send out an email and say, we need people on the canning line for here is a list of shifts. And if you, in your area of responsibility, whether that be me, my partner Dave, our team in the art department, department or marketing department all the way to our seller team. We basically utilized every single individual that we could to run our canning line for twice as many hours in order just to keep up with the constant and incredible growing demand that was coming through on the canning side.
That is fantastic. So it's all hands on deck. We're canning. We are all in our
canning. Yeah, yeah. I mean, basically every day, like around lunchtime, Dave and I would exit whatever meetings or conversations that we were having, and we would go over to the canning line so that we could relieve people who were working on the canning line so that they could go eat and work through a, like an hour-long rotation of people grabbing lunch and getting fed. And then they would work their way back into the canning line while we would then go work our way through whatever other meetings or ideas that we had. So it was on a lot of levels. I mean, there was a lot of stuff about 2020 that was tough and it was hard and it was unfortunate. But from a business standpoint, our team came together really great, and it brought us together, and we worked really hard together, and we had our goal, which was survival and survive and thrive. And, you know, at the end of the day, the stuff that we'd done to position ourselves going into it and the financial literacy and all of the various things kept us with a really informed and engaged staff. And I feel like we came out the other end of 2020, moving into 2021, in one of the strongest and best positions we've ever been in.
When we're talking about beer sales, are we talking about beer volume or?
Yeah, beer volume. We lost millions of dollars in revenue, because when you look at cans versus kegs, so a keg holds 15.5 gallons, a can holds 12 to 16 ounces. So for every single barrel of beer that we package, you're talking about, you know, hundreds of cans versus a couple of stainless steel reusable vessels. So it switched our business. We readjusted our budget in March to affect the change in things. Our CFO doesn't really like to adjust the budget. It's something that we set and we want to live or die by, but there were enough significant changes that Brad decided that it was worthwhile to address. So, you know, we dropped a couple million dollars off of our top line sales, because that was going away and not coming back. We adjusted for some of our volume increases and cost of goods changes around it. So we actually went from, you know, pints through our tap rooms are a higher margin item, kegs because they're reusable or a little higher margin. So we took our higher margin sales, we eliminated those for a number of months, and then we put everything into our lowest margin products. So along with that kind of comes in that financial literacy and taking a look at what and where we're doing and what things we can do to save money. If we didn't need to spend it, we didn't spend it, you know, those types of things.
So making the beer that goes into the cans, the can product, is not as profitable as the keg.
Certainly. Yep. Yep. So there's a lot more labor, and obviously than every single packaged item, from the can to the carton to the cardboard tray to all of the people that it takes. You know, it takes three guys to run a kegging line, and it takes six people to run a canning line. So
can you be specific at all at how the revenue in 2020 was different from, say, 2019?
Honestly, on most fronts, we were relatively flat from 2019 to 2020, whether it be volume and dollars. We made up a ton on the expense side. Like every month we go through our budget, and even if we were missing on top line sales, we were killing it on bottom line expenses, because everybody was coming together and making smart decisions and watching the bottom line. And we knew that if we weren't running a smart and lean business, then we might not be in business.
If I had told you in, say, April 2020, Clay, relax, you're going to have the same revenue this year as you did in 2019. What have you heard?
I wouldn't have believed you, but I wish that you would have. And I would have believed you, because I actually would have slept better, because I think 2020 was probably the year of like the worst sleep I've had in my entire life, because it was up at all hours, like with things going through my head, watching Netflix on the couch at 3 a.m. so I didn't have to think about my business.
So just to make sure I understand. So for the whole business, the business that is Sun King, revenue was pretty much flat.
Yep, that is correct. Our volume, we were up 100 barrels over the previous year in our production side. So production and sales don't completely balance out, because we usually have a few thousand barrels in production, but sales were relatively flat for the whole of the year. Revenue was relatively flat, because the change in the volumes and the cost of goods and other elements of it. And then again, we were able to really hone in on the expense side and really try to help drive things back to a closer level where they needed to be, and actually in the year in the black. So it was a good year.
So labor obviously is a huge, huge mm-hmm. portion of your expenses. How did things work out with the people? Did you end up having to lay some people off?
We furloughed 14 people when this all started. Out of the 14, 10 of those came back. The other four that didn't come back were in areas that there just wasn't there what they did. We sell beer in Florida. That's actually our best state outside of Indiana. And our guy who lived in Southern Florida, there was, you know, Florida had no beer sales, so we didn't have the ability to keep him. And we actually sold beer in Ohio and Illinois. We still sell beer in Illinois, Chicago most specifically. But so we had a couple of out of state reps that there just wasn't work for and no way to come back.
Is this just in the beer production and sales side, or are we also talking about the restaurants?
So it's really kind of all together. I mean, on the taproom side, we kept all of our salaried managers on staff throughout the entirety of our operations. When the pandemic hit, most of the rest of our staff in taprooms are part-time folks who wait tables, take orders and deliver beers. Those folks actually all didn't have any jobs because we weren't actually open. And then as summer came on and restrictions were eased and we started to open our taprooms, we brought a lot of those folks back. Some of those folks didn't come back by their own choice, but essentially if you wanted to come back, we were here for you. We did change our service model a lot and offer more. We needed to do table service. Downtown never had that. So we offered a much higher level of customer service than we had been doing in the past, which helped us run our business better. So we had a lot of shifts on the hospitality side of our business. But again, on that side, actually, I think we got stronger as a business as well.
Bring me up to date when we talk about the tap rooms and these more consumer side parts of the business. Can you just run through your locations for me quickly?
So we have our original downtown production brewery and tap room on College Avenue. It celebrates 12 years this year, which is crazy. We have a tap room in Broad Ripple that is right on Broad Ripple Avenue, 62nd Street. And that is a tap room and it is also a barrel facility. So a lot of our barrel aging happens in that space. Then we have a tap room on 116th Street in the Fishers District that's up in the kind of IKEA area right there. We have a tap room and distillery, and the tap room in Fishers also has a small batch brewery in it. We have a distillery and tap room in Midtown Carmel. And then last year, in the midst of the pandemic, we opened up Sun King Kokomo, which also has a small batch brewery. And we opened up the Indianapolis Airport tap room. Okay. And then all of our tap room locations are 100% family friendly, and they all feature food from local restaurant partners who have operations on site.
Oh, okay. There you go. Forgive me for not knowing this.
Nope. So as Sun King, we made a decision a long time ago that we are originally a brewery. Now we're a beverage company because we don't just make beer. We make spirits and we also do hard seltzer. So we really feel that our strengths are fermentation and creation of beverages, of beer, spirits, seltzer. And then from there, as we have opened tap rooms, we feel like we offer a really great guest experience. And we like to serve our beverages directly to you in our tap rooms as much as anything, as they're public facing units for Sun King, so that people have an opportunity to come in and fall in love with the brand and try different offerings. I mean, we've got 30 plus different beers on tap downtown and 20 plus at each location, and gives people a chance to experience Sun King, so that when you are out at a bar or restaurant and there's another dozen beer brands that you could buy, or in a grocery store, hopefully you've had a wonderful experience with us and that causes you to, or you found something you love and that causes you to want to buy our beers or spirits or seltzer in other places. So, so we just do the hospitality and the liquid, and then we work with other local restaurant partners. I think actually one of my favorite parts of Sun King is the opportunities that it's given us to work with other entrepreneurs to help them build businesses, grow businesses, do new creative elements.
So in retrospect, that sounds like that was a pretty good decision where you didn't have to worry about cooks and everything that comes with having to deal with food.
It certainly was. I mean, they're really two different businesses. My partner Dave and I both grew up working at brew pubs, and a brew pub is a brewery that has a restaurant attached, and they really are different businesses. So when we opened Sun King, we decided that we wanted to stay away from running restaurants, and basically we wanted to make beer and we wanted to create something that other local restaurants could carry that would hopefully bring people out and that people could enjoy local beer at local restaurants. And we wanted to leave that to the professionals. And we still, to this day, do leave that to the professionals. It takes a different kind of person to run a restaurant. I know I listened to your podcast with Eddie Somm, and I think Somm's does a great job running restaurants. And they also run the gamut between restaurant and brewery, but it's a tougher road to hoe. And, you know, last year was particularly tough on the restaurant side of things.
So in terms of staffing at the tap rooms, are you about back to where you were, you think?
We're pretty close. We're right now hiring in all of our tap rooms, and we're actually having the hardest time that we've ever had staffing our places. And that's something I've talked to other folks in the brewery world, in the hospitality world, and particularly in the restaurant world, like back of house side of things. People are having trouble finding people to work. And I don't know whether on the hospitality side, if folks who worked in restaurants through all of this thought, you know what, this is tougher than I thought, and I'm going to go back to school or maybe find a job in another area, change up my career path. So there's less people that are kind of into doing it. I don't know whether it's, you know, stimulus money and extra unemployment elements, and people have found some comfort and are getting by and not ready to go back to work, but it's pretty tough out there trying to find people to do the jobs.
I know one of the things that is a potential irritant is cans. We've talked a lot over the last year about, you know, supply of goods, of, you know, of raw goods, and aluminum, I think, is one of them. Tell me about the shortage of metal for cans in the brewing.
So it actually isn't a shortage of metal. There's plenty of metal. The shortage is in the runtime and facilities that produce cans. So it's actually, I mean, the one thing that I think people don't realize, you know, walking around on the street as an everyday person, they don't realize the packaging issues that are out there. So as the pandemic shifted, you know, it shifted not just Sun King's business, it shifted every other brewery in the country's business, because we're all experiencing these similar new realities. And it also, you know, you have producers who were producing, you know, packaged goods that would go to restaurants. Well, you can't produce those same goods and get them out to a grocery store in the same size packs. So whether it's cardboard or cartons or plastics or closures, like those things across the board became much harder to come by because there was such an increase in demand. And at the same time, a lot of factories and other things were shut down. So you have an increase in demand, a decrease in supply, which causes an increase in price, and just a lot more trouble getting them. So we buy all of our cans from the Ball Company, and the Ball Corporation has a facility in Monticello, Indiana. So most of our cans are produced in Indiana, but Ball not only produces cans for Sun King, they produce them for Miller, they produce for Red Bull, they produce for Monster Energy Drink, you know, and then the elephant in the room in our industry has been hard seltzer, which last year saw like a 300% growth in sales volume. And hard seltzer is a product that actually pretty much exclusively goes in cans. It's not something that you see on tap, not that there was tap business or draft business last year. So all of these things. And then, you know, we saw the shift in our business, and there are a lot of smaller brewers who maybe started mobile canning so that they could get cans out. We actually, last year, we canned beer for St. Joseph's down the street because we had a little bit extra runtime on our machine and their friends, and we canned some beer for the tap down in Bloomington. And then we put some other of our friends on with some mobile canners that were there. But it was one of those opportunities that we were talking to the friends, and they're like, we've got beer that we don't know what to do with, or that we can't get out because we don't have, you know, draft business right now. So we were able to pivot on one hand and help a couple of other breweries out to actually use our machinery to put beer into cans. And then we use a labeler and label them. And we did all of that actually. And so kind of, we talked as sales shifted, and then we hit July and August where we were selling, you know, 100 to 120% of the cans of beer that we were in the previous year. And then, so we started increasing all of our buying patterns and getting more cans. And we were actually feeling really great because our business had come back around, and we had replaced our volume in cans. Then all of a sudden we got notified by our can supplier that cans would be going on allocation and that we would not be able to get the amount of cans that we had been getting. And for the foreseeable future, we would be getting 300,000 cans a month, and that was all that they could produce for us, and that they were allocating everything based on some previous allotments and what their runtime is, and various other elements of things they don't tell you. And so we went from like, woohoo, our business is saved, to like, oh my God, now there's a can crunch, and like, what do we do? And last year was the year of the pivot, and I'm glad to be hopefully out of that or coming out of that. But we were fortunate on a lot of fronts. We, over the last year or two, we've done a lot of rebranding of our packages as we've kind of grown and launched some new things. So we had what we call obsolete inventory. So we had truckloads of cans that were at our supplier's warehouse that we weren't ever going to use, that we were wondering what we were going to do with. So we were able to buy all of those and bring those in-house. So actually, again, we have a labeler. So as some new seasonal varieties are coming out, they're actually cans that have pre-printed graphics for a different beer that are now wrapped with a new label to make them the beer that is appropriate. It looks a little wonky, but it makes use of a very precious commodity. So we were able to do that. My father, who was the original president of Sun King, has some business associates in Indianapolis that do a lot of business in China. And one of them worked with a canning company in China that actually happened to be an ex-Ball plant. So Ball used to be, or is, the world's largest metal packaging company, but they built plants all over the world. And at some point they started selling off some of those plants. So we actually got cans in from Australia, Korea, Thailand, and China, all from Ball plants, to run through our machine and test. And fortunately, Gary, who's a friend of the family who does business in China, had a line with a company in China that actually was able to set up an account. And we just had a container load of 12-ounce aluminum cans land in Canada, and it's now working its way to us. It's like a 3-month process by the time you get through everything with tariffs and transportation. But we actually now are we probably have purchased about $350,000 worth of cans that we have in a warehouse that are basically, we're continuing to build our canning inventory. So as the summer comes and sales tick back up, that we have enough cans to not have out of stocks and run our business this summer.
What are the couple of lessons that you're going to take out of this last year and apply to your operations going forward?
We have learned a lot on a lot of levels, for sure. The table service and the elevation of the service that we've given, which actually kind of changed the level of service that we give. It had started evolving in Carmel when we did that, because it's a little bit more full service as a food hall. One of the things that was big for us previously, you know, we joked that Sun King was a get in where you fit in spot, and you'd walk in the door, somebody'd say hi, and you'd find a table or a place to sit. And if there wasn't a place to sit, you'd stand around and make the people at the table uncomfortable until they finally left, which wasn't a good customer experience really for anyone. So with the restrictions on capacity and other things, that it pushed us to basically guard the door and have our hosts or concierge kind of manage the traffic flow and make sure that people were seated. And that's actually something that we found elevated our guest service level. It elevated our guest satisfaction, and it made us run a better business. So that's something that, you know, when it's Tuesday afternoon, it's not necessarily a big deal, but when it's Friday or Saturday, it is. So that's definitely one of the things that have stuck for sure with us. And then a lot of the others are just little things around. We've had to change the way that we operate. And again, we've got a really great teamwork environment, and we always had a good team, but I think people are a little bit more cognizant of what it takes on all of the aspects to really make this thing work.
Was it a profitable year?
Very slightly. We finished in the black, but not very far in the black. And again, we lost millions of dollars in revenue, and we protected our bottom line by making really smart decisions on the expense side and cutting wherever we could cut. So we ended in the black, but it was not so to say it was a profitable year would be yes, but not a real big winner.
Did you apply for a PPP loan?
We did. So we applied for and got a PPP loan. And honestly, I would say that the PPP loan, if anything, we were a very successful case of it, because we had a lot of cash flow woes. One of the things about our industry is that, so January, February, are the worst months of the year, and March usually starts to climb back out of it. But so they're also our lowest cash flow months. So typically speaking, we are drawing from our line of credit. Last year, we were actually finishing our Fisher's Tap Room, which was behind schedule and over budget. So we hit March in a really bad time cash flow wise, and the pandemic couldn't have hit us at a worse time. And that was really one of the biggest woes. You know, it's like, well, people still like beer, and I think we'll sell some beer, but some of it was like, how are we going to make payroll? And like, we're maxed on our line of credit. And how do we dig ourselves out of this hole, not knowing how business is going to be? So the PPP loan came through at a very great time. It allowed us again to keep our staff. Everyone on staff took a 25% reduction in pay throughout the entire summer period. We were actually able to finally later in the year claw back to getting everyone back at full pay. But that injection of cash allowed us to cover payroll. It allowed us to help cover our rents and utilities, and did exactly what it needed to do, because it got us through the April and May period that was still really rough and rocky. And once our tap rooms reopened in June, that helped a lot. And while we were at reduced capacity, again, we found people came out at different times of the week. So we were busy at different times. It wasn't like, hey, it's Friday and Saturday and we're going bonkers. It was like, hey, it's Tuesday or Wednesday and it's pretty darn good because it's nice outside. And once we reopened our tap rooms, even at reduced capacity, we got tap room sales that were pretty relevant to the prior year and really close to what we were budgeted on. So the PPP loan gave us a great injection of capital that helped us get through that, and then allowed us to, as we made money, pay our line of credit down and get ourselves back into a strong financial situation and a strong cash flow position so that we could end the year strong. And like I said, we had a little bit of profit, and we used that little bit of profit to pay down the debts that we had so that we could hit 2020 and be in a great position to grow and move forward in a positive direction from here.
So you include the PPP loan, you were profitable.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. How much did you get?
We got $900,000.
This year, are you going to be able to apply again, or?
We are not. I mean, we made the decision. The first round of PPP did exactly what it was supposed to, and it put us in a position where we ended the year in a strong position. And we took the PPP because we needed it to survive, and we don't need it to survive. And we are not the kind of people who want to take advantage of programs if we don't need them. I'd rather see that money go to other. There's plenty of struggling businesses out there. So that money needs to go to the places where it's best suited. And we got ourselves onto a strong footing, and we will work our way from here.
Well, best of luck to you this year. We'll check back here in another year and see how things are going.
Sounds good. Thanks, Mason.
My thanks again to Clay Robinson. If you want to learn more about how Sun King and other local breweries have been able to weather the pandemic, Susan Orr has the story in the latest issue of IBJ. And before you get on with the rest of your week, there are a few other strong stories I want to draw to your attention. March Madness is taking on a whole new meaning for athletes, coaches, and support staff who are largely sequestered for the duration of the tournament. John Russell and Mickey Shuey explore the mental health repercussions of living in a high-pressure bubble and how officials are helping participants cope. Also in this week's issue, Lindsay Erdody details how state legislators could help bars and restaurants by allowing them to offer more and richer games of chance. And Greg Andrews explains why one of Indiana's oldest companies soon will be acquired and dropped from the list of the state's publicly traded firms, a development he traces back to a flurry of resignations among its top executives in 2016. Again, you can read these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at ibj.com. I will say it's quite a bit easier to access all of our latest news and all of IBJ's data on Central Indiana's business community and economy if you're a subscriber. It works out to about $2 per week for actionable information you're not going to find anywhere else. Just go to ibj.com, click on the subscribe button. And thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.